When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Overlooked and Undercooked, a critical analysis of Rob Schneider's attempt to, how does he put it in the article, guy? Upset, shake up the television
shake
industry?
Shake up the traditional show business model.
My name is Tim Batt.
My name is Guy Montgomery.
And I'd like to introduce our esteemed guest. It is our absolute pleasure to have Rose Matafeo joining us.
Hello.
Hi, Rose.
Wow. Can you... Why?
This is the fourth episode in the show. This one is called VIP Treatment, an episode addressing the way in which society treats our stars and our Rob Schneiders. Yeah. Throughout... Tim insisted to you, Rose, I think by way of defensiveness, that this is the worst of all the episodes of this show we have seen so far.
Yeah, it's the fourth and worst episode, and I can't fathom... But that's really weird because it's like, this is obviously the first introduction to this show I've seen.
That's not that obvious to me, but I'm glad you've clarified.
I'm not a huge fan. I binged watched Real Rob at a really dark time in my life. But it's weird because it was so bad that I can't fathom... something better in a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that doesn't make sense logically.
All you know is this.
All I know is this, so I don't understand
why would
how
you expect
this...
anything more of any other part of it.
I expect, yeah, exactly, this is my reality. This fourth ep is my reality in Real Rob universe, and so I'm like, I don't know, I can't expect anything of a better quality. Or so I mean,
I shouldn't have said anything. I shouldn't have said anything.
I mean, they've really shaken things up in the terms of not having a plot. Or
you're right. I'd just like to quickly say, because it does feel like a lifetime since we started watching the episode. This episode started, the cold open for this episode, huge departure from what we usually see, which is just light conversation in bed. It started with Rob mowing down
a guy
in his car.
He literally hit someone in the car.
And him and his wife, Patricia, playing it incredibly straight and incredibly serious.
It was like Crash. It was like slow-mo. He was coming out of the driver's seat, freaking out. And you know what I love about this is because what it was is that, because obviously this is a passion project, it was an opportunity, a very, very small, minute opportunity to show his dramatic acting chops.
Right.
Because this whole thing is a showreel. This whole thing is a thing that goes, look what I can do.
True.
Like, if it's self-funded.
God, this episode
I mean?
Is a real showcase of his multiple attempts
100%.
At talent,
eh? It's like he went hard out on the drama of that. It was... Oh my god.
And kind of a, like, it almost seemed like a fisheye lens, and they slowed down some of the footage. They really played it as big and for as little laughs
as
possible.
It was the closest to stakes that we've had in the show so far. And as soon as you're like, oh wow, they're really doing something here, they immediately take it away from you. Cops arrive on the scene and are blown away by the presence of... These cops work in West Hollywood. I mean,
but they encounter...
How can seeing Rob Schneider have any impact on them?
Rob Schneider.
I cannot believe it. So we start strong, and then immediately, so the whole, it's called VIP treatment, right? The whole vibe, I suppose, of the show is supposed to be, the episode rather, is that he gets treated well because he's Rob Schneider. People go recognize him and go, Rob Schneider, right? Which is, I understand, a departure from what we've previously experienced.
He gets dumped on occasionally. Occasionally he does get recognized.
No one treats him with reverence, though, in the other episodes. This is the first time when it's good to be robbed.
But he's tried to spin it on its head, right, in terms of going, you know, the VIP lifestyle, people recognize you and love you and adore you, but they will ask you to tip.
Well, this is it. So he tries to show the full breadth of, you know, the cycle of fame. So after, initially what we see is special treatment. He walks into the Cheesecake Factory. He gets a table immediately. You know, he offers to pay the chef for the meal. The chef says, you can't do that.
I'm the chef wearing, and we know it's a chef because he's wearing a large hat. And, yeah, he offers to pay for the meal with a card at the table right after the food arrives.
But it's
so panto, isn't it? The whole thing.
But it's just
like a big, huge plate of pasta, I think. And the chef comes out with a huge
cheesecake.
He's eating like, it's like a comical
and
food. It's like if you're writing a kid's cartoon and you go, a big plate of food, that's what arrives. And it is delivered by the most two-dimensional cartoon depiction of what someone assumes a chef is.
It's literally the Starburns logo walked out of frame and into...
It's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like the chef from Ratatouille. But
yes.
The rat?
No, anyone can cook, Gusto, whatever his name is. So what I find interesting though is like those decisions, there are so many stages at which people could have stopped this. You know what I mean?
Like
No. I mean, this had to be graded. I know this is made by Rob Schreiber, but there are some things that he couldn't do. He couldn't edit this, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't grade this. This had to go through, and Netflix released this. It had to go through.
Well, that's what jutted out to you. You said Netflix needs to go down for this.
Netflix needs to go down for this because from what I've heard of Netflix is that you have to do is you have to get this like captioned. You have to send it to all of the locations in the world. It goes for approval. It gets re-edited and stuff, comes back, then gets released. So many people, this would have gone through. This is not, because when I see this is released on Netflix, it's almost like Rob Schneider has made this. It's like having a baby and leaving it on the front doorstep of an orphanage. And you're like, have this for free.
Yeah.
I don't want this anymore.
I think the traditional deal is that you would do a deal with Netflix and they would pay for production, or you would do a co-pro or something where they pay a bit and you pay a bit and then you kind of split up proceeds or whatever. Actually, you wouldn't do that with Netflix. I think what's happened here, Rob Schneider has funded and made this himself. That much we know.
Yes.
I think he has paid Netflix to put it on their network.
I really think so.
At best, he's sold it for 50 cents on the dollar. So he's like, I'm $500,000 down on making this, but at least some people are going to see it.
Right,
you also said while watching it, and I quote, this is teaching me so much about good directing.
Well, in the sense that I saw possibly the worst direction, like in, okay, so we noticed this. There was a point in the show where they physically, they're cutting between two shots, right? Which are, it's utterly, it doesn't make sense because they're cutting from like kind of a close up to maybe a mid shot, but they, between the close up and mid shot, they are changing body positions to the reverse.
Yeah.
So they're not, they're,
so
not
like Rob's
only
on
just,
the left in one, and then he's on the
right on
in
the other.
Others.
And but it's the same conversation. So they're literally in space, moving from left to right.
Teleporting.
So they're not, they're not just crossing the line. They are literally changing positions to get around the problem of crossing the line. But they're still doing both.
Yeah, and it, like, you watch it. Rose and I flipped out. We were just like, "This is fucking madness!
Shocking." 15-year-old media studies students would know better than that.
It's insane.
The amount of people who must be on that crew, even as someone who works in the like
catering,
costume catering,
the craft services table would know to not
they
do
all,
this.
They all answer to Mr. Schneider.
The thing is as well,
he's like, I say where the line
is. The edit, like, I actually think whoever edited this did an okay job. Like, they would have been delivered something insane.
Truly shocking,
And so what this means is the editor has made the decision that it would be best to completely break this visual rule of television and filmmaking than to stay in one of the takes, because that would solve it. If you just stayed in one of the takes and let it go, that'd be all right. But it obviously was so completely unusable, the best option was to, about five times, flip you out as a viewer by changing their position.
As soon as Rob Schneider dictates that this is what we're doing on set, immediately, like, In your head, you're like, well, it's one or the other. There's no way we can use these, we can cut between these two shots because they are entirely the opposite.
What they should have gone with is delete that entire scene and just replace it with some sort of silent film interstitial explaining what we needed to know plot-wise.
A title
which,
card.
Very little, because plot-wise, this episode is fucking... There is no... It's like they've filmed lots of different scenes in isolation and then put them together in no order that makes sense. Because what it, what we were saying, I don't know if you said this in previous episodes, is the poor man's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
We haven't actually drawn that straight line between the two.
Yeah, it's so clearly Rob Schneider going, I'm kind of famous. I have these interactions. Why can't I make a show about this? And what Curb Your Enthusiasm succeeds in, which is jokes and self-awareness and plot structure, where it's like you can obviously see one situation is setting up a punchline for the end of the show, right? Rob Schneider has missed that specific detail.
Yeah. It's infuriating because every piece of action you see unfolding, you can't be like, oh yeah, this will, because it's all worthless.
You're rooting for him.
You're like, whatever. It doesn't matter, whatever. But like what I think he was trying to encapsulate in this episode is when I was saying he's trying to show the whole breadth of the celebrity experience is initially he goes out and everyone goes, oh, Mr. Rob Schneider, please come straight to the front of the line of the hospital, or please go straight to the front of the line of the Cheesecake Factory. And halfway through the episode, in a device that he abandoned for the previous episode, Rob does one of his talking heads sort of documentary style looking at the camera, and he says, you know, like what a lot of people don't realize, I think I wrote it down, he said, every time something goes wrong with the house, I always, this is a quote, after he's shown all of the upside of being famous, now to try and be like, but also, you know, the Lord giveth, but the Lord taketh away.
It's not all good though,
this
guys.
Is a quote. Every time something goes wrong with the house, I always get raped on price.
Yeah.
It sucks being famous. That's like, he literally reinserted a device he had abandoned into the show to communicate this feeling to us.
Yeah.
And then
using literally the most problematic language you could describe the scenario.
I know one thing about, if I've learned one thing about Rob Schneider from watching the fourth episode of Real Rob, he does not shy away from the edgy topics.
He's an edgy
words,
guy.
Or observations or characterizations.
In fact, could you give us a blow-by-blow of the scene where he is a mime?
Yeah, so there's a number of offensive things in the show. Obviously saying raped by house prices. He there's also some dodgy-ass shit about Mexican workers in it. There is,
but he's got carte blanche on Mexicans because he's married to a Mexican.
Of course.
Which is like his in to just absolutely denigrate.
It is such a naked entitlement you see on his smug writing face that he puts his wife in 100%. Those scenes.
Makes fun of an overweight family in the Cheesecake Factory.
By literally the joke in that one is just cutting to them.
Yeah, or and rather it, large, you know what? I'm going to look at myself. I'm not going to say overweight. A larger family, okay? Yeah. I've been poisoned by Rob Schneider's.
Describes them as pre-diabetic and says that they're probably doing them a favor.
Yeah.
By depriving them of a table, food. Which he cut and crossed the line.
And also, okay, so this, okay, I need to go through this really quickly because I wrote down some plot. Okay, so first of all,
take your time, Rose. Enjoy yourself.
Okay. So they hit a person in a car, okay? Then they go to the doctors because that Rob might be hurt, right? Here's the whole, oh, you're Rob Schneider thing. People keep recognizing him. Then something to do with the assistant killing his wife's fish, which comes out of nowhere. You got to get a new fish to assistant.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can I just quickly put in one detail, which was also introduced and never reintroduced?
Yeah.
At the start of the episode, he's like, oh, I won $40,000 at the casino.
Oh, that's another one. It never came back. Oh, my God. Okay, sorry. So she needs money for her mail review.
Yes.
That is a second scene, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my God, I forgot.
He's won $40,000 at the casino. Then
he's counting stacks of cash on his table.
He cuts his finger. Then he gets worried because, again, he makes an awful joke about...
Casino whores handling money.
Casino whores handling money. Then there is possibly one of the worst examples of ADR, like bad ADR that we've seen.
Eat that mic up, Rose.
ADR, sorry, I'm vibing on the bad audio
quality,
the behaviours of Rob Schneider. The worst ADR that we've ever seen, but it's ADR for a line of him saying casino whores. Tim, you made the great observation that they had a second chance on that.
They landed.
And they landed on, again, like, imagine being Rob Schneider in a voice booth watching that footage and trying to time the phrase casino whores to his lip sync.
Okay, what is Rob Schneider's relationship to real Rob by the time they're in post-production?
We've railroaded Rose's plot.
No, in true Rob, real Rob fashion, I feel like we should divert our attention to something completely different. What do you mean?
Well, like, what is it? What, so he's doing ADR.
Yeah.
Does he care at this point?
I think he still has to be passionate. Okay,
you have to care. It's entirely him.
I think him and his wife are enabling each other in the sense they're like, it's funny. But it's funny because... No. It's because it's what we go through.
Yeah.
It's what we go through every day.
Also,
right?
Jamie Lasseau, the assistant, is in on this. He's also a co-writer, for your reference.
Those are the three writers.
Wow.
Rob, his wife,
and... What a depressing writer's room.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You got to think they get someone in to punch up. So continuing with the plot, we made it to the hospital then.
So then the assistant kills the wife's fish. He's like, go find another fish. Then he goes and visits his wife at a exercise class where they're also doing street performing classes in the same studio. She says, why did you do street performing classes? He says, no, oh, I won't do that.
He said, I'm too famous.
I'm too famous for that. A lot of other shit happens where he gets recognized for stuff. Patricia has got all of her male review show men buddies around his house. He's upset with the amount of cock in his house, apparently, which is also articulated in one of the weird green screen piece to cams, which is... Oh, we didn't even talk about the bit where he addresses the camera.
Broke the fourth wall, yeah.
It's the first time they've used the Ferris Bueller device of just giving you, the audience, a line.
Honestly,
and it was freaky.
No, it's like Funny Games. You know, Michael, you know that, you know Funny Games, the film where, okay, no. Well, it's a spoiler, but Michael Haneke? I don't even know how to say his name. It's a horror film where people know, like, where all of the stuff happens, basically. It's like this family who gets, like, you know, like, fucked up somehow. All the stuff happens, but they, like, get away. And then the main protagonist of, like, the bad guy turns to the camera and is like, nah, that's not happening. And then rewinds basically what happens, and then all this bad shit happens.
Oh, that's quite a fun device.
Which is amazing. They rewind the film.
Cool.
But that's almost what I thought was going to happen here.
Oh, and then you became scared that we were going to have to live through Ross.
I was so frightened that we were like, oh my God, has he seen Funny Games? And then, oh. But anyway, it's the most frightening thing. It's like, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Which, having Rob Schneider.
It's crazy. He looks at you.
Yeah.
At us.
And it's crazy because it's like, it's right around him using the other device where he looks like, pick one and stick to it. The other thing he did in this episode, and you will be devastated to hear that you missed out on this, but... Like, it's interesting you drew a comparison between this and Curb Your Enthusiasm, because in previous episodes he's been going for Seinfeld, where he inserts his stand-up,
what?
Which is meant to be...
It's so painful.
Where it's like loosely thematic. It's meant to be loosely thematically connected. But so in the last episode, no talking heads, stand-up interstitials. In this episode, no stand-up interstitials, all talking heads, and a brand new device. This is the fourth episode. We should have the language of the show pretty down by now, Mr. Schneider.
I also think, I mean, because, yeah, Rose is probably more than me, but we're both kind of interested in sort of the more technical elements as well of film and television making. And you've got bloody three-quarters of a degree.
I've got three-quarter of a degree in film and TV, yeah.
But there was so many examples of, like, I think not only have they not cracked the visual language, I think they changed director of photography this episode, or maybe at least camera ops, because there was so much weird
there is no
shit
DOP
going
on this.
you just yell out in the middle of a scene, you're like, what is this Dutch angle?
There's a Dutch tilt. There was like, there was a point where the cameraman, camera person, was it could have been a woman. Yeah. I really hope
smash
it wasn't.
The patriarchy.
I really, truly hope it wasn't a woman doing the camera
yeah,
opening.
Let the agenda down if it was.
Yeah. Just, they literally stand up. They were sitting down. They like, oh, they dropped the camera, essentially.
Okay. So Rob is on a couch talking to Patricia, I think. And it's spelled Patricia, but I believe it's Patricia.
Yeah.
And the camera person is obviously, for some reason, they're holding the camera, and they have felt the best decision would be to sit in the same position Rob is in, and when he gets out of the couch, they will stand up. But you like feel the whole movement, and it's all out of alignment. Well,
it's good. This is fucking dirty. It's dirty. It's autobiographical. It's like you're on the set.
We're on the set with them. We figured this out like 100 years ago, how to shoot someone from a sitting to a standing position.
You got if someone's sitting, the cameraman's got to be sitting with them. If someone's standing, you got to be standing with them.
It is. There have been,
you know, those cameras you can put on the collar of a cat to see where they're going in the daytimes.
Yeah,
that is better camera work than the real Rob or whatever. Real Rob, sorry, no the,
no real, the. Real Rob.
Rob,
real
Rob.
You, and, was taken.
And you know what? So I really quickly want to finish what happened. So basically,
it's imperative.
It's imperative.
You know that the people at home are on tenterhooks wondering how all of these plot, you know, threads have resolved themselves.
So basically, he decides to do the street performing class and says, "Oh, to Patricia? That he's going to be a mime at the circus. He's like, I'm going to take you to the circus. I'm going to be a mime before the circus show. They go to the circus show. This is a very poorly attended circus show. You know, when you see a scene, and even if you don't, like, obviously we've worked in film and TV, lucky enough to have worked in TV, and you know when something's so sparsely cast with supporting actors and really bad chairs and stuff. This is not a real show. We know this.
Yeah.
Anyone would know this. So he's doing mime, and he's making fun of people walking in. First of all, he makes fun of a guy looking for a seat. Ha ha ha. Everyone laughs. Then another woman comes in, who might be a little bit larger, a beautiful woman wearing a beautiful bright lime green boob tube dress.
That's right.
Comes in, obviously makes fun of her, perhaps because of her weight.
What do you think?
Everyone still laughs.
What do you think was on the casting sheet for that woman's character?
The roughest description you could possibly. Yeah. Rob Schneider does not hold any punches, all right?
Because they gave her the same makeup they've been giving characters in Happy Madison movies for years to denote that they are a joy kill.
I think it's not even a description of what, like, obviously the joke relies on her perhaps physical description. I think they literally wrote just bad woman. Just bad, a bad woman. They're a good woman and they're a bad woman. Yeah.
And then what happens, right?
And then a man walks in who has obviously got a little bit of difficulty walking, right? And everyone's like, don't do it. This is like his extras moment. It's almost like extras, like the cerebral palsy right?
Yeah.
Which is so obviously like kind of lifted from that in a sense. I mean, and also don't lift from kind of most offensive worst part of extras.
Like Ricky Gervais barely got away with it.
I watched that episode I watched that episode again recently, and it's just like,
didn't get away with it.
Wow, you would not. Yeah, but clearly people still are, because this was, when was this put out on Netflix? Real Rob.
This is 2015 this season.
Wow, okay.
Nothing, don't you dare use anything in here as a moral barometer of what's okay.
No, but I'm judging Netflix for even distributing this in a sense.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Which is why they got to go down. But anyway, okay. So we get
But then I don't want
to
say
the,
that because I want a Netflix deal.
We get introduced to the guy who has got some sort of a disability who's walking in.
And everyone's like, don't do it,
the
Rob.
The scene slows. It's like time slows down. And so we get people's reactions he's written it so the audience know.
Yeah.
Everyone knows he shouldn't be.
Comedy is about timing and it's subverting your expectation of a situation. What he basically does is shows us a setup, then shows obviously the obvious reaction, does not subvert it in any way, follows through on it, and then what we expected to happen happens. So basically he's deconstructed a joke to the point where it's not a joke at all. It's just a situation. Obviously, he gets punched by a big burly man who's with this person he's been making fun of.
Thank
I think he did best work in the show.
Well, there's some consequence to him being a fucking asshole to a disabled man.
Absolutely.
The way they treat plot, it's sort of the narrative equivalent of just someone at a party who opens a fresh beer, has a sip, puts it down, forgets they've opened a beer, opens another beer, has a sip, puts it down, forget. And then the next one, there's like 90% full beers. Wasted these five beers?
And the lack of storytelling skills is to a point where it's offensive. But what is offensive is the actual offensive stuff. Like, he's literally just making fun of a disabled person 100%. In this sequence. And it is wild to me that, like you say, it got through. There's not a lot of tears to the production here because he is self-funding, producing, directing, writing and starring in this thing.
Judge, but jury and executioner.
There are fucking other people in the room at some point, and someone needs to sit his ass down and be like, my dude, and he's like, no, that's why it's funny, because I'm going to get punched at the end. It's like, I know, but this is still fucking terrible.
This is why Hollywood is poison.
How much funnier that joke would have to be to qualify existing. However, it does neatly lend us to a closing scene, ostensibly where the episode comes full circle. He is waiting in the hospital once more, but rendered unrecognizable due to his swollen and painted face. And who should wander down the corridor for a tasty little cameo?
David Spade.
That's exactly right.
I used to have a crush on him when he was in Just Shoot Me. Now no longer have a crush on him, obviously.
Understandably
he looks like,
so.
His facial hair makes him look like the V for Vendetta mask, I'll be honest, but blonde. And then that's how it ends, isn't it?
Well, and David Spade doesn't even get anything of value given to do. He just comes in, he's David Spade, he doesn't recognize Rob Schneider, and that concludes the episode. I got a question for you, Rose.
Yes.
Are we punching up?
Are we punching up? Okay, so it actually brings us to an interesting thing that was brought up in the episode of he was tipping. It was like pay disparity, kind of, you know. So I think we are punching up, yes, because this is a man who has made a lot of money on things that aren't very good. It's hard because I think you can't necessarily transfer like talent to money. There is work that goes into it, opportunity that you needs to be like, you know, given to you. So in no way are we punching up because he has the money to make this passion project.
So you mean in no way we're punching down? We are punching up.
Oh, sorry. We're punching up. Oh, 100%. He is an adult man. He is an adult man with children.
A child.
He's got two kids. Yeah, he's got three kids, I think.
Kids, eh? Because in this, they showcase the very gorgeous baby that he's got, but he's got older children.
I didn't see that baby,
this is the first episode in which he's not obsessed with the functionality of his dick, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna catch up on the first three. But no,
you should watch.
No, you've already seen them. We all know.
We're obviously punching up. Like, what? Okay, I don't. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's upsetting.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about it because it makes me upset that he.
Well,
it's like there's been one woman who's won Best Director at the Academy Awards. You know what I mean? Like, this is the Hollywood we're living in. Where Rob Schneider,
this television show and the Academy Awards do not exist in the same conversation.
They exist in the same world, like in the same vicinity as each other.
Yeah. Well, they're both.
He's definitely been to the Oscars. They were both very far back in the
room, filmed with cameras. Rose, what would you say to Rob Schneider?
Fuck you, man! Because it's like, stop what you're doing. There's so many people I want to tell to stop what they're doing. And I know everyone should be able to express themselves creatively, but I don't think anyone should be able to inflict harm upon other people and be this disrespectful to many groups of people in their show, and also take up space on the server that is Netflix. And I think Netflix does need to start deleting things, and this needs to be the first thing.
If you want to see a softer side of Rob, may I encourage you to check out his special Soy Sauce and the Holocaust.
That is honestly the title.
So concludes the episode. Rose, do you have anything? We have no idea when these episodes
will
be released. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I do another podcast called Boners of the Heart with Alice Sneddon. We talk about strange crushes on certain celebrities. Rob Schneider, never been one.
Hasn't he? I feel like he's featured in an ep.
100%. He's never been
as a heartthrob, but I thought he had come up as a target of discussion at some point.
He's on the shit list.
Well, yeah. We're going to get Alice to do an episode, so he might make an appearance on the back of your shared disdain.
Can I just ask you a question as well, Rose? Because you've kind of got a little bit of a love for bad things as well. Like, do you have a desire to consume the rest of the series?
100% not. I think life is too short.
Yeah.
And I've got so many other things to do.
Like what? Name three.
Lie motionless on my bed and watch my ceiling fan and recuperate from what I've just experienced.
That's three. Thank you so much. I would like to end this episode with a quote from Rob that he says during the show, written as a joke, I presume. This is after he accidentally kills the fish with his assistant. He says, I guess we go... How do we sort it out? I guess we go back in time and feed the fish. Wait, we don't have a time machine. I don't know what we do now.
That's the whole saying. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much, Rose.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.